With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, welcome into the Nick Baugh Podcast, coming to you live from the AOI Studios, aka my basement office. Absolutely love it down here. And when I was transforming my office into the pod room, I had a vision of what I wanted. And you know what? AOI made that vision come true. The desk, the design of it, the chairs, it all just looks great. It's comfortable. I love it. And I've told you about the desk. I've told you about the Aeron chair. But AOI does it all, whether it's construction or furniture. AOI will help make your ideas a reality just like they did for me. You got to check out AOI on the web, aoicorp.com. That's aoicorp.com, or give them a ring at 402-896-5520. We have a long overdue, excellent podcast on tap for you here today. So with college basketball in full swing and all the duties that I have and all the travel that I have with that, combined with Bo Rude's got a full-time job, he's also been traveling quite a bit. We just haven't been able to sit down to discuss the new football hires. So Bo and I have been, you know, we've been going back and forth texting, okay, when are we going to be able to sit down? Because, you know, listen, it's been kind of quiet around the Nebraska football program for the last couple of weeks and really last month or so, except for the new offensive coordinator, Matt Lubick, and Mike Dawson coming back. And so it's just been a long time since Bo and I have been able to really sit down and hammer this out. We knew we wanted to find time to where, like, we had, you know, an hour or two to really sit down and get our thoughts together and get it out and share what our thoughts are on the hire to you guys. And the other thing, sometimes, you know what's not the worst thing in the world is just kind of like waiting and digesting and reading and thinking about something that just transpired in sports. We're so like immediate now that like something happens, you got to have a take. What's your thought? Is it bad? Is it good? Is it the greatest thing that's ever happened? Is it the worst thing that's ever happened? Like sometimes, like it's one of the things I've liked about the recap pod that Bo and I would do for the Nebraska football games was we wouldn't record until the next day, you know? And sometimes it's hard to like have a game happen, turn on the mics and be able to provide perspective. Sometimes you need to like wait a minute. So I've actually like, I've enjoyed being able to slowly digest my thoughts on Troy Walters being out, Jovan DeWitt being out, and then the hirings of Lubick and Dawson. So, and I think Bo felt the same way. Now, of course, this pod goes off the rails initially, so brace yourself with some nonsense. But, you know, I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. Bo and I go about an hour on what we think of the new hires for Nebraska football, because obviously it's important, you know? I mean, it's your staff matters, you know, clearly. You know, Scott Frost felt like they needed an infusion of some different blood into the staff, and they got it with a guy that they're bringing back in Dawson, and then a guy that Frost is bringing back into his life in Lubick. Obviously, having those guys have crossed paths before with each other at Oregon. So, without further ado, here is my podcast conversation with former All Big 12 Husker linebacker Bo Rude on the new Nebraska football hires. Enjoy. All right, we're inside the podcast room with one Bo Robert Rude, who is shadow boxing as we speak. I feel like it's been a while. Last time I was here, I cried.
There's a lot of crying.
There is a lot of crying going on with the Kobe Bryant pod. By the way, if you haven't listened to that, I highly recommend you go back and listen to our Kobe Bryant tribute podcast. That's what you need to do. I've been doing a lot of traveling. You've been doing a lot of traveling. So we haven't had an opportunity to touch on a lot of different things. We're going to get into all of the new coaching hires with Nebraska football. But because we haven't been able to hang out a bunch, I mean, do you have two things I want to touch on with you? The Super Bowl? Do you have like a hot Super Bowl take outside of J-Lo and Shakira or just they be shaking that ass?
I offended people at dinner when I hinted at like who's gonna win the ass off. And the girls at the dinner thought I was a pig. And I go, what do you mean? Like, you don't think that? And then they all watched it. And as they started doing what they did, they looked at me and kind of nodded like, yeah, this is an ass off.
It was a full-fledged ass off.
It's a full-fledged, who can shake their butts more?
This is the kind of stuff you and I think of. The only thing, I mean, of course, I was fine with the performance, right?
Oh, I know.
I was fine with it.
But, hey, Nick, everybody knows you're fine with it.
But what I don't understand.
Nick is appalled right now. Everyone's
I got to tell you, I'm upset with what happened. No.
He has a tear in his eye.
What I don't understand is so I always viewed this who performs at the Super Bowl halftime as a snapshot into who is really, really popular in music and pop culture at that time. And I don't, J-Lo and Shakira aren't unpopular, but yet they don't, all their songs were from like 2004 and five. And
Nick, that was, here's why I would argue that was one of the worst halftime shows.
All right, here we go.
Here's why.
Because you don't like women doing stuff.
No,
like,
okay. I actually enjoyed it. It was fine. But there wasn't a good song throughout the whole show. It's like, how can you be performing at the halftime and you don't have a good song? You don't have a hit.
Right.
Like, knew what the number one hit probably was?
My Hips Don't Lie?
That or the, there's a she-wolf in the closet.
You ever seen that music video?
Oh, I have.
I mean, that's like one of those things.
That was a college thing where you're just like, who is
you
that?
Turn that on in your cubicle. I had a cubicle at one point when I was in sales, and I all of a sudden heard, and I was just like, I'm working on those TPS reports.
She's a she-wolf in the closet.
That's
the best song.
She-Wolf.
That's a bad.
I'm not gonna lie. If I'm at a bar and She-Wolf comes on, I'm kind of crunk. But
I think Shakira. I like Shakira more than J-Lo.
Oh, if like right now in the Marriott room 212 is Shakira and in 213 is J-Lo, I'm going to 212 100 times out of 100.
What are you guys doing there?
I'm gonna say. But okay, so your big thing was there wasn't good songs.
Not a good song.
Here's what I would, if I were, I mean, it's 2020, we're going to have an election. I might enter myself into the race and run solely on Bruno Mars every Super Bowl until further notice. I feel like people would be like I'd be like, if as your president, the first thing I would do was make it so Bruno Mars performs at every Super Bowl.
He's too good.
He's
too
perfect.
Good.
He's the perfect.
He's pop. He's like pop, rock, soul, R&B, hip hop, all rolled into one, and
old, new. A 15-year-old can love it. A 65-year-old can love it. Like, that's hard. It's hard to be able to appeal to everybody.
And he's got good. He's got good songs, but more than anything, he's just like he's a great live performer.
Yeah.
So he's got the songs, he's got the performances, and it's like it's just mass appeal.
What's he doing, man? It's about. I mean, 24 Karat Magic. That shit was 2016, 2015. I mean, it's like.
Yeah, some guys are about every, you know, 3-4 years. When you do those long world tours,
yeah,
that's the thing. Is like when you do it big time, like you do a big time album,
you need to take a couple years off.
Oh yeah, you take.
You're just touring for years.
You do a year in the States, then you do like a year overseas, hitting
over in London. Is that what you're doing? But you agree? You agree with? I mean, it should be Bruno Mars every year.
That'd be my vote.
But yeah, so well, okay. The football game, any take at all? It was kind of a bad game.
I thought it was a bad game.
Been two straight years. Even the Patriots Rams was kind of like, and another punt.
There's just not a lot. There wasn't a ton of great. Like, there's never a great offensive play. Maybe I don't know. It seems like there's.
I know. I thought it was just an okay Super Bowl.
It's there's sort of these plodding games where.
Right. I mean, it was. Yeah.
I think it's more nobody wants to make a mistake. And it's like if two. Prize fighters win the ring and they like for like 9 rounds. They kind of were, they never actually hit each other. They just kind of like, you know, felt with the jab a little bit and they're like, ding, ding, that's round 10. They're like, no one's landed a power punch or a punch.
It did kind of feel like that, didn't it?
That's what it is.
What's up with that? Because that's not, I don't know, that's not what you would think going in, you know, like,
I don't know. I think it's just the way football is, and then that game, it's a little bit more, less penalties called. So there's, I don't know. I think it becomes a more of a defensive game.
Okay.
And people are like, what's this?
Defense?
Okay, so that's your that's our Super Bowl. And that is Nick and Bo's recap of the Super Bowl.
And I'll say this. I'm glad the Chiefs won. I like Mahomes. Andy Reid, you got to be pumped for Andy Reid.
He's rocking the stash.
Oh,
any great guy that's like, I'm committed to. You think he's committed to the stash for the rest of his life?
He's committed to the stash and calling everyone like, man, hey, man. You know, come on, man. Man. You're the man. Man.
If he shaved his mustache, I bet he would look like a different human being.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
Okay, so what? You're happy for Andy Reid. You're happy for the Chiefs.
But I felt there, at least of the people I was watching, was like, if you're not a Chiefs fan or a Niners fan, I don't know that anybody was like, we really love this team. We think this team is like special. And like, I felt like you could have put, insert any of 12 teams in the league, and it was, they were all sort of like decently good, and nobody was a great team.
And I don't think anybody in that game is like, there is an element of like polarized. Like, you need to have, someone needs to be in the game that makes you feel something. You're like, Brady made you feel something. You know, even like Sean McVay, the young hotshot, probably made you feel something. Like, I just don't think, like, everybody on the Niners is like,
It didn't feel like they were in, like to me, it's like, oh man, this is the best team in the NFL. I thought it was like,
you thought both teams were just okay?
I thought they were just both okay. Okay,
there we go.
And that's not usually how I feel about the Super Bowl.
Did you watch the Oscars?
5 minutes of it.
You're not an Oscars guy.
I'm not an anti-Oscars guy.
Because Kim, my wife, just is like, loves the, like, that's her like idea of a great time is watching the Oscars, which is kind of weird.
My wife enjoyed it too. I think it's because the outfits and the women love the glamour of it.
Yes, and I mean, any, you know, cutaway to like Jake Gyllenhaal, they're like, oh god. But
are we out of line in the podcast today?
Oh no, we're rolling with it. We are rolling with it.
In these LaCroix,
vodka.
Crocs. We're getting crocked of these.
But what's hard about watching it, it kind of felt stupid when you watch the Oscars and you've seen none of the movies. So you had no. So like the only. I was rooting hard for Toy Story 4, and I was rooting hard for Frozen 2, and so like the old, any random, you know, category or Oscar that had included one of those. I mean, I was all in on it. But other than that, have you seen Parasite?
No. So that's why it's like, when Parasite wins and you hadn't seen it, I'd seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and I thought it was really good. So when that gets beat by a movie you haven't seen, you're like, and you can't understand even the trailer. You're like,
well, that's, I guess that's what I understand. I was just going to say with Parasite, you watch the trailer and then even watch the clips from the Oscars of like, what, I have no idea what that movie's about. Like, no.
I kind of want to see it now, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for it to, it won everything, you know?
And I don't know that any of the movies were the directors who were in its best movie.
Right.
And maybe that's the sign of why it should have won. Maybe it is really good. And, you know, like, I loved Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but it's not Tarantino's best movie.
Right.
And so I feel like, same with Scorsese, Irishman was good, but it's not his best movie by a long shot. So maybe it was rightful. I don't know. It was
And then the thing that's crazy is, that was, so Brad Pitt won Best Supporting Actor. Mm. And that's his first ever Oscar he's ever won as an actor.
I don't think people have ever really taken him seriously as an actor. So that's...
But it's just, I think it's amazing. I think that's like, you kind of go, you hear that and you go, whoa. But then I think that illustrates how hard it is to win.
Yeah.
Like, it's really hard. I think Hanks has two.
Meryl Streep's the only one that's like, it's not hard for her. She does it every year.
Right.
Everybody else, it's like, if you can even be nominated.
Right.
That's serious.
All right. I'm going to steal there's a CBS college basketball podcast with Matt Norlander and Gary Parrish I listen to that they do this thing called Trivia Time. Can you guess the two movies that Tom Hanks won an Oscar for?
Philadelphia.
Nailed it.
And
you got it.
It's not Forrest Gump, is it?
Oh, it's Forrest Gump. Oh. He went back to back on that ass.
Yeah.
93, 94. back to back.
Damn, I'm glad now,
Think about in 1994 when he walked off the stage winning his second Oscar. If you would have said over under Oscars he's going to win for the rest of, you know, till 2020, you and someone have said, you know, a half. You would have been, you'd have bet your life.
Yeah, there'd he's been made another, a lot of good movies.
Oh
too,
yeah,
but again,
that's the point of like it's really hard to win.
It is
really tough to win. Was Brad Pitt that good in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
He was such a movie star in it that I think people were, and I respect this from the Oscars, is sometimes they overthink it and it's like, who's the most dramatic and artsy fartsy gets the award?
Yeah.
I'm like, I think you got to respect that it's like, this dude was the most movie star of all movie stars
right.
this year.
Who's just, because that's the thing is you can, like we've talked about, you can talk shit about Tom Cruise all you want. Dude is just like, when he's on the screen, he's a star.
He's a star. And Pitt was a star amongst stars.
Right.
Like he's with Leo and Margot Robbie and, right. you know, Pacino, all these guys. And it's like, it was Pitt's movie.
But that, so I thought that was interesting that was his first. Just goes to show you how hard it is.
Man. I don't know. I don't think he's been nominated before.
Yeah, I don't even know what other, you know, like, he's been good in a lot of movies. I don't think he's got a transcendent performance.
No.
Isn't that weird, though? For, like, a great actor, he doesn't have, like, Hanks has, like, you can just rattle off, like, a bunch of, like, great, like,
yeah, you know,
roles he's been.
But, you know, I think some of Pitt's best movies weren't taken as seriously. Like, Fight Club was never taken seriously, but it's an iconic role,
yes.
right?
I loved him in Moneyball. Like, I loved Moneyball.
Moneyball, he was awesome.
He was
in Moneyball.
Billy Bean just eating popcorn, making deals, just.
He was good now.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah, okay, so should we man this whole thing up and get to football talk here?
You like football over there?
I like football talk. Okay, so we were talking about how like it's felt quiet with Nebraska football. I think a lot of that is with the new calendar of the signing day getting moved up, so like all the hoopla is pretty much done by the time you're celebrating Christmas. Mm-hmm. There was some scuttlebutt about potential coaching changes. Here we are. I've gotten a bunch of people like, when are you and Bo going to talk about the new coaching hires? Well, here, let's do it. So Mike Dawson back, Matt Lubick hired. Jovan DeWitt out. He took another job with North Carolina. I think that seems like one of those things, like it's good for him. It's probably not necessarily a death blow for Nebraska, you know, and there you go. And then I want to start with Lubick, and with that conversation, start with Walters, just with him being, with him not being here anymore.
Yeah, I you know, even reading the papers now where, you know, Sip's kind of like it was
a mutual thing. I'm at Applebee's.
Sip.
I'm at Cheddar's.
Sip, tell me what are you eating tonight, and give me your thoughts on the Troy Walter situation.
Well, I'm at Chili's. I got an order of baby back ribs coming. And I got to tell you, we got to be careful with Troy Walters, but I think it was a mutual thing. No, that's how it's kind of been portrayed, is like it wasn't a firing, but it felt like it was.
Here's
hey,
the interesting
man.
Part. He just got another job and it's
with the Bengals.
It's an assistant wide receivers coach, though.
Assistant to the regional manager?
Assistant to the assistant to the regional manager. but that's clearly a big step down from being the offensive coordinator in Nebraska making $800,000. Because I'm just telling you right now, I don't know what he's going to make, but it's not going to be much. So if like financially,
so he's not the wide receivers coach?
He's the assistant wide receivers
he
coach.
He is Dwight Schrute.
He's Dwight Schrute. Assistant.
He's not Michael Scott. He is.
He's not the assistant regional manager. He's the assistant to the regional manager.
That's a big.
So it's one of two things. It's one, he wanted to get to the NFL and he's just like, sorry, this is what I got to do. Or it's like, that's just sort of where the cards shook out for him, which he just had to take whatever job. And I think as a coach, sometimes that's where you end up, is like, I just got to take a job. And then next year is where I can, you know, I can hopefully find the spot I need to get to. Or it's like he moves his way up with the Bengals, which is maybe what he needs to do. Yeah, I think that's kind of an odd one. With, you know, with him and Frost and Lubick, sort of how it just maybe it wasn't the right fit for Troy in Nebraska or in college maybe
I know.
A,
I don't.
Maybe
I don't
he's
know.
A pro coach.
I don't know how to like sink my teeth into Troy Walters. How that all shook out. I do think there is something to the ultimate truth serum is the open market. For all the people that talk shit about Jim Harbaugh, let that guy hit the open market and see how long he's. So you can sit there and be like, Jim Harbaugh, that. Oh, really? Well, what if he was if he was available, all but like Bama, Clemson, all that like would be all over that guy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
And Bo Pelini is always an example of like, if he wants a defensive coordinator job, he
gets, and guess where he's going?
The national champs just said, we'll take you.
LSU,
right? You know? So that always tells you like if you got, you know, as a play caller, you got the good. So I think you got to be one of two things, right? You can be a great recruiter, you can be a great like position coach coordinator, or you can be both, which is like usually the greatest coaches around. But if you're not a great recruiter, you got to be really great at just being a coach. And I don't know.
I got the sense from listening to various recruiting people that I don't know if, and again, I don't like, I'm just prefacing this, like, I don't fucking know. I'm just going off of what I hear from people that maybe do know. Like, that he wasn't maybe the greatest recruiter in the world. That he wasn't, his name wasn't attached to a lot of guys.
You know,
and
I think Travis Fisher and Ryan Held really were the two that stood out this year as, like, the guys that were their best recruiters. And I think, you know, I don't know, if you're an offensive coordinator making that much money and you don't call the plays, like, you, I think that you maybe need to be elite at that. So maybe that factored into it. I don't know either. I'm just speculating.
Right.
So I
just think like all we can go off of is like something clearly wasn't really clicking with all the wide receivers that were brought in. Like nobody could really get onto the field. Now I get it. Some of those guys are young and all that stuff and it takes time, but the wide receiver is a position that typically like younger guys can get on the field quicker.
Yeah.
In Troy Walters' defense, that was a pretty bare wide receiver room that he took over. Outside of Stanley, not a lot of dudes.
Yeah.
The numbers were low. Remember, Frost always talked about how the defensive backs and the wide receivers were the lowest numbers of the position groups that they took over. And then the other thing that I was thinking about is like, because of injuries, guys leaving, Maurice Washington, his suspension, all that stuff, Frost had to take the best wide receiver, Wandale Robinson, and move him to running back.
Yeah.
So it also hurt Troy. I bet, you know, so now Troy's like the one guy he did have now is like in the running back room. So, I mean, but the reality is like that position wasn't excelling.
No, and nobody has anything bad to say about Troy Walters. Like,
no.
Like, you know, all those coaches, everything they've said is extremely positive. It just, it's, hey, we, you know, right now it's best for, and sometimes that's truly, there are circumstances where it's the best for both to have a fresh start and it's just a better fit elsewhere. And that,
right,
I think, is the case where Troy's going to have a great opportunity now in the pros. And I think, you know, this Lubbock is going to have a good opportunity here.
So there's a bunch of stuff with is it Lubbock or Lubick? Is it?
Lubbock.
You want to go Lubbock
of Texas?
Lubbock, Texas. Okay. I'd screenshotted this and I've been like, wanted to kind of get into everything with this hire. There was a story from SIP. This is the SIP podcast, apparently. That the headline of the story is, it's easy to understand why Nebraska fans may regard Frost hire with skepticism. And I think the whole premise of like his column was, hey, there's not a lot of hoopla about this hire. Usually in Nebraska, when a new coordinator gets hired, people lose their minds, right? Their imaginations run wild. They go crazy. And I basically the story is kind of like you can kind of understand it, where there's been a lot of Husker fans that have maybe gotten burned before with freaking out over new coaches. For example, Bob Diaco, when he was hired, was supposed to be the second coming of, you know, the greatest defensive mind ever. Everyone lost their minds. That felt silly. Everyone lost their minds over Mike Riley to a certain extent. The people that are the Kool-Aid drinkers, they then feel silly. So I think there's like, there has been this kind of like, for Nebraska hired a new offensive coordinator, and it's kind of like, everybody's kind of like, eh.
But here's why.
That's why I wrote down why. Let's hear, because I wrote down four things. Let's see what you think.
Scott Frost calls the plays.
That's it. I think it's a couple of things. Number one, it's like I said, they've been burned before. I think Husker Nation is a little on guard with their emotions right now with some of the stuff that has happened. And then you just said it. I think people struggle to get all fired up over a new offensive coordinator because this is Frost's offense.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like what I regarded it was when Papuchis was hired as the defensive coordinator under Bo. Everybody was kind of like, okay, well,
Papuchis or Carl, it doesn't matter.
Whatever, it's Bo's defense. Yeah. So I think that's the case.
But so when Bo's the head coach and he hires Sean Watson or Tim Beck, it's a big deal because it's like, oh, we got somebody different calling the plays on offense who is truly going to influence this team more.
So I think like if you – let's say instead of Troy Walters being out, Chenander would have been out and there would have been a defensive coordinator hire – this place should be, it would be buzzing. There'd be new articles, new stories, new stuff every day. People would be losing their minds and the coverage over it would be crazy.
Because they see in their minds, they start seeing transformation.
Yes.
That's what it helps them. Like a new coordinator always helps them do that when it's on the side of the ball where they are in charge. But this is a situation where this guy is coming in and he's going to be the glorified, like, he's the coordinator, but like Greg Austin's going to be the run game coordinator. This guy's going to be the pass game offensive coordinator, and Frost is going to put it all together and say, here's what we're
doing. I think that's a huge part of, because I thought it was an interesting story Sip wrote, and I'm like, yeah, it is kind of quiet. And then I thought, like, but that's easily understandable when you kind of think about it. I also think, and maybe this isn't totally true, I think when basically what you said is totally true, but I also think, like, when fans feel like they got the head coach right, they got the guy, they don't get as hung up on everything else.
Yeah, it's been surprisingly quiet. That's the more I'm thinking about it, it's like, yeah, you're right.
Say it out loud. Nebraska hired a new offensive coordinator, and it pretty much felt like news for a day. This is a place where people lose their minds over everything with football.
Yeah. And it's also, though, I think the fact is this guy is a guy that he worked with at Oregon for years. So they're like, it almost was like an easy transition for people to understand because they go, this guy is now gone. And the guy coming in worked with Frost in this offense for years. And
so it's not hard to conjure up in your mind with the impact he's probably going to have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it was like an easy transition to accept. And you're kind of like, okay, well.
But it's essentially okay. So with all that said, what do we like about Lubbock, Texas? What do we?
Well, one, they say he's a really good recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know his dad was a longtime coach at Montana State, and then he was the defensive coordinator for those really good Miami Hurricane teams in the 80s and early 90s. Like, we're talking.
Yeah, the real.
Like,
real
coming
dudes
off the plane in fatigues,
yes,
looking for something.
Yes.
Like, he was the defensive coordinator there, and then he was at Colorado State for, you know, I think it was like 15 years, 12 or 15 years. And that's where he's really known in Colorado Springs. He's a big deal, he's a big name there. So, he comes from a, you know, coaching family, and, you know, those guys are usually, they know their stuff because they've been.
Like, I think that stuff matters.
Yeah, they've been around.
Look, Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, that stuff, you grow up around it, it matters usually. Yeah. I think that was recruiting. Then I thought about West Coast recruiting. He's been on the West Coast for a handful of years now. I mean, I screenshotted it, so I might as well just like read it because it is, you know. So Lubbock was part of two conference championship teams, five teams that finished the year ranked in the top 20 and four 10-win teams. In the three seasons, Frost and Lubbock were on the same Oregon staff from 23 to 2015. The Ducks ranked in the top five nationally in both scoring and total offense each year, and they went to the College Football National Championship game in 2014. Lubbock spent the 2019 season working in private business, but was Washington's co-offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach in 2017 and 2018. The Huskies won 10 games in each of Lubbock's two seasons with an appearance in the Rose and Fiesta Bowls. I think in 2017, he was the top wide receiver coach of the year and all that stuff. So, like, with all that said, like, this guy's got a pretty good resume.
It's a good fit. For me, the more than anything is, you know, we've been talking about fit today. Like, he seems like it's just an easy fit. It's a good fit. you mentioned West Coast recruiting. I thought that was a good point because that's not our strength right now. We're
going to Florida.
We got a strong Florida presence. Mike Dawson's got that East Coast connection. And then like a lot of the rest of the guys are Midwest.
Yeah.
And there's really no like, we got a dude that can go into California, Arizona, Utah, Washington, Oregon, those places got a lot of talent. Like more
and what do ideally that's where you go get your skill. Yes. And he's coaches a position where that work, like it'd be different if like the offensive line coach had West Coast recruiting ties. It's like, like that's not as that doesn't connect as well. But I mean, this dude, you can go get wide receivers out of Cali and LA and all,
all those places, Arizona's got a lot of talent. I mean, those are places that he's going to help a lot. He's got those connections built in.
So that's fit recruiting. What I wrote down was like, I think there's something to like, Lubick knows what this offense is supposed to look like when it's really humming.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Frost, they see things the same. They speak the same language. That matters. Like, because ultimately, I think what Frost is trying to create here is Oregon, not Central Florida.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's usually, and he was there. So I think that makes a difference. I think it's also good. I mean, he learned under Chris Peterson at Washington for a few years. And I don't care what anybody said. Chris Peterson, with what he did at Boise State, and then, like, he's one of the best coaches of the past 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not like an all-timer. But when you're looking at when last 20 years, you're writing down the top 10 best coaches, he's one of them.
Yeah.
That makes a difference. He strikes me as someone who could help take some things off Frost's plate with the offense while Frost focuses more on other things because he has like because he took over as the offensive coordinator when Frost left to go to Central Florida. So I think I do think Frost needs to start doing this. I think Frost needs to start getting involved in special teams more, being more involved in the defense, taking a more CEO role instead of just focusing on the offense and maybe having someone like Matt Lubick in there will give him the comfort to know, okay, Matt's got this. I can go focus on this maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't know where I read this. It might have been in our boy Sip.
Sip at Chili's?
Is he at Chili's now? So what time does he leave Applebee's to go to Chili's?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock is transition time. Bless Sip.
Sip's the best. If he was listening, he'd be dying.
I think I read something about, giving away your play calling. And I think it was even Tom Osborne that said, like, he doesn't think a coach should do that. Which was, I was very intrigued by that kind of thought process from a guy like Osborne, who you would kind of think that would want to be the CEO type man.
Yes.
But he actually was almost anti that. And I can't exactly remember what the specific reason was? It was more like, you feel like you get too out of touch with the flow of the game, I think, is what he was saying.
Yeah, something that makes sense. I mean, because you know what we heard a lot? And I'm not throwing stones at Frost with this stuff, but you know what we heard a lot in his post games? They would ask him a question about the defense or something, and he'd be like, I don't know, I was with the offense getting the next set of plays ready. I don't know, I was with it. It's always like it seems like he was – his influence and his fingerprints were all over the offense. And ultimately, Frost, as a head coach, you got to be able to see it all. You got to be able to be involved in everything.
But you can't call the plays if you're not ready to call the plays. And that takes more time and more effort than you would be able to do if you're just, the guy that's just watching.
Totally.
You know?
And I'm just spitballing here because, again, we don't know. Like, maybe Frost would be more involved in practice with something else or in game planning with something else if he had someone in that offensive room that thought exactly like him.
So that's the mark to me is taking things off his plate in the preparation.
That's what I think is huge with this hire.
And giving him more time during the week and more time,
he's got has a thousand things.
Yeah,
on
there's
his
just
plate.
So many more things that he can't be doing. Everything he just he can still call the plays and he's going to still do more with the offense than he's going to do with the other things.
Of course, yes.
But it's going to free him up to spend that energy and some focus where it needs to go, which right now is special teams and defense.
And so I actually think in that regard, I love this hire.
Yeah.
Like I love this hire. Do you think, I mean, with the passing game, you know, and him coming in and helping with it, there was an element of like the passing game, I don't know route concepts and things well enough to be able to diagnose that stuff. Like it seems like the X's and the O's were fine. Is more about getting the Jimmies and the Joes that can separate and make plays. Is that how you can? I mean,
no, but, I wouldn't go that far. I would say there was issues not in the scheme, but in our players executing that scheme correctly.
Right,
like
right.
Not that they can't do it, like, oh man, they just can't block. They're not strong enough. It was like they didn't know who to block. They didn't know what route to run and when to run it. Mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of that. And then on top of it, there was just
there
times
was a,
like,
there was
that can't get open,
of, yeah.
Can't catch the ball.
Because how many times
can't block.
You and I would talk about this in the recap pods all the time where it'd be like Spielman and Wandale would run a route and would be like 3 or 4 yards apart from each other.
Yeah, there was just a lot of that. And so, you know.
So hopefully, I mean, again, hopefully Luby can come in and like.
Clean it up.
Clean all that stuff up.
Because if it's clean, then it's, okay, who's, you know, hopefully our talent is better than other people's talent.
Right.
Because that's what we were beating ourselves last year, which is frustrating.
So yeah, because do you think Frost, when he sits down with him, is going to say, help clean this up, or it's more like, hey, come with some new ideas?
Probably a little of both.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think there's a ton of new ideas. I would say more than anything, he wants to clean it up. But I think this guy, from everything I'm hearing, is a guy that will help bring a new kind of organization.
Right.
Some people, that's a skill there. They know how to organize things. They know how to, like, how to, you know, maybe bring it all together so it's a little bit simpler, right? Maybe that's part of what this guy's going to do.
So, I don't know. I think there's a lot about this that I understand why it's not getting a lot of hoopla because of all the things we talked about. But I also think, like, when you really critically sit down and think about it, I think it's like a really... I think it's something that could really help. I mean, I think the passing game was honestly think a lot of the issues with the... Sure, Martinez is a little inconsistent. The offensive line is still kind of building its way up. But this offense's inability to consistently throw the football and throw the ball down the field created a lot of issues for the offense to get humming.
Yeah.
So, like, I do think there's... There's elements of this guy being able to come in and like address some stuff that really was problematic.
Yeah. And the second part of that is I think we got better recruits this year.
I agree.
Like until you see them, you don't know, but there's no way these guys that are coming this year there's not going to be one or two of them that can help. Where last year, none of those recruits other than Wandale. Like, Wandale was the guy and nobody else could help from those young kids. And I just got a sense that at least one or two of those guys this year can actually help.
I totally agree.
I mean, that Omar Manning, he's got to help. He's, you know, he's a big JUCO kid. Like, he's here to play.
Has to. I mean,
there's no other reason for him to be here if he can. All indications point to he's going to help and maybe be our best receiver
right. Pretty
quick. But one of those other young kids, I think, is also going to help too. And so I think the prep school kid, I think his name is Delonte Brown.
Yep. The Bell West kid.
The Bell West kid, if he gets his grades right and can figure it out, I think that's, you know, for him, it's going to be, he's getting in here in the summer and like to learn a playbook. That's going to be his whole issue.
Right.
It's like to get on the field, he's got to learn how to.
Right.
I mean, I think at Bellevue West was probably like,
no, it's probably like just
slant, go.
And in
or,
his defense, that's high school.
That's all he had to do.
High school. You know what I mean? Like that's.
But like to, you know, this JUCO kid, like he was at TCU and he spent 2 years at a JUCO. Like he's a man.
He's
now.
More ready to go.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Anything we missing with this high? Is there anything?
No, I think we covered it. Yeah.
Mike Dawson. Mike Dawson kind of looks like the guy that's always down to go get some wings. Doesn't he kind of look like a guy that's just always down? Like
he's like, where's Sip? And we're like, you're not going to believe this. he's at BW3s.
There's a 99% chance at some point over the next 365 days, Dawson and Sip are going to be at Buffalo Wild Wings just hammering some wings.
I mean, sometimes they just run into each other.
I like that, though. I like that about him. I mean, he was obviously interesting. I mean, he was on the staff, then left, and was the outside linebackers coach for the Giants. Then they went through a bunch of changes, obviously. And so now it's crazy to just be back already.
It's kind of bizarre.
Like? I mean,
I like that he got a year coaching NFL outside linebackers because, you know, I don't know if he's really coached that specific position group, but that's going to be great experience to take back with him for these guys. So honestly, it's good. Fine with me. Good hire. He knows what they're looking for. They know what they got in him. And yeah, I think it's fine.
Because he's got recruiting ties where they probably need it. That, you know, if we want to talk about the recruiting thing, Dawson was the D-line coach. And now, you know, and there is like an element of like certain defensive linemen, pass rushing stuff with the outside linebacking stuff that correlate. But that's an important, when you've taught like that outside linebacker spot in this defense is like they need him. They need Dawson to be like really good.
Yeah. He's got to get the most out of those guys. And that was a position where we called a weak spot last year for sure.
No doubt. I think it probably helps that like some of these guys probably are familiar with him.
Well, they're familiar with him and he's familiar with the scheme. Like it's like Lubbock in a sense where Frost is going for continuity. Like he's bringing these guys in that they don't have to spend time teaching the coaches. Like the coaches know.
Right.
They're going to know the scheme. And so they're going to hit the ground running.
See, and I think that stuff, and I know it didn't necessarily pay off the first 2 years, but just because something didn't work right away doesn't mean that it wasn't good. Like I still think the continuity and not having to waste time coaching your coaches matters. Like it's, you know, like how Frost brought his whole staff from Central Florida. I know that didn't necessarily pay off the first 2 years in terms of the continuity, but like that makes a difference. I mean, when you're having to coach your coaches, hey, this drill, this is what I want. Hey, this is what I'm calling this. And hey, this is what, when we, this is how we handle motion out of this. Is that like, when you're not having to do all that stuff, that like you just, it's just what, like the less crap you have to put up with or you have to deal with, just you get better at everything else.
Yeah, the stuff you need to work on, not just the basics. Like,
right.
You can go to that.
Do you know dedicated special teams coach was something I think we were all kind of like, okay, what's going to happen with special teams? Are they going to hire a special teams coordinator? So what?
It sounded like they were going to hire Bill Snyder's son, and then he just took a job with USC as the special teams coach.
Yes.
So I'm a little concerned in this area. Like,
what are they doing with that? I don't know. Too. I don't know what the plan
really
is.
I haven't heard much, and it's surprising because it was such a weak spot for our team, and I haven't really seen the emphasis on what the plan is. I mean, they don't have a coordinator. Nobody's been named. Nobody's been hired.
No, and I don't know who, you know, if it's going to be. I mean, how does this? You know, we've talked about this before, but like, would this just be something that would be heaped on to someone else, or would it be like everyone has to be a part of it? Like, how does that work? Like, I don't even know how that would work. Like, can I ask you a dumb question?
Yes.
Could you have it be a scenario, or does everything have to work in unison of like Barrett's in charge of the punt team and Ryan Held's in charge of punt return? And could you have it be that kind of thing where it's like the only thing you think about is this? Or does it have to be one coach is the special?
You like, can do it however you want to. And
how did you?
We had a special teams coach that was never a full time. I've never had a full time assistant special teams coach in college. In the pros, they have full time, but it bounced around. But there was always like somebody. Sometimes like kind of like punt team was one. Like, hey, this guy kind of helps with punt all like so. But you know what, Nick? I don't know that there's one perfect way. I actually think, though, somebody needs to take ownership of it. I like somebody kind of overseeing the whole thing and being responsible for – so if that's Frost, then Frost is the special teams coach, and maybe he'll divvy that up into sections. But ultimately, he's like – but see, I don't think he'll want to do that since he's calling the plays.
That's a lot on him. I mean, if you have to call the plays
– you have to give up your offensive play calling to be the special teams coordinator. So he won't do that. But that's the part where I just don't know right now. I just don't know. They haven't named a guy that's on the staff. So,
and I don't know if there's anyone in I just don't know if anyone on the staff has experience with the special teams that could take on that
right now.
Because it's not going to be Greg Austin, because he's the run game coordinator. I mean, I just feel like if you're the O-line coach, run game coordinator, and special team, that's a lot.
Sounds like Barrett and Dawson would not. Just because something they've done before.
Tony Tuioti?
No.
I don't know. Ryan Held?
Held would be a maybe, but I would doubt that. The tight ends coach is always a candidate.
Sean Becton, yeah.
But I don't know if he's coached that. So to me, it sounds like they're looking for a special teams consultant, and then they're going to divvy up. Because that guy can't be a full-time coach.
See, that's the thing, and that's what's tough. It's like, so now you're having the guy that is running your special teams can't. He's restricted in what he can do.
I don't know if he can recruit.
I don't think he can recruit. I don't know how some of that stuff works. I mean, I know there are certain. I just know the basketball world where there's only like certain guy. There's only X amount of guys that can actually like be on the court coaching. Now everybody ultimately breaks this rule. Like, I think everybody's breaking these kinds of rules, but nevertheless, like you have to adhere to it to a certain extent. And I don't know what it's like. I mean, if you're actually going to have your special teams coordinator be someone that like can't be out there all the time, I don't know what that looks like.
I don't know if they can't be out there or like what the restrictions are, but. To me, it looks like that's the route they're going,
right?
And they haven't found their guy yet, which, you know, it doesn't matter. But spring ball is
coming
in a few short weeks.
Right.
It'll be time, and you'll want that guy there for them because that's the time.
Was Bill Snyder's – it was his son or his nephew?
Yes,
Was he hired as like he is one of their full
– He was – that was the rumor.
Yes.
And he took a job with USC as their special teams coach. So that's probably
the next thing that I'm interested in, kind of seeing what gets what the plan is there, just as to what I'm with you. My guess is they're going to hire, like, there's going to be some some analyst that's on staff that has restrictions that is in charge of the special teams, and that's where they go with it, because I just can't see Frost taking it on, and I just don't know if there's anyone else on the staff that makes sense on paper to take it.
But not right now. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they may do the divvy deal where they just, you know, everybody does one.
And you would, I mean, and listen, everything can work, you know, like you can have a special teams coordinator and it cannot work, and you can have, divvied up and it can work. Like, there's no one way to do it.
I like having somebody that like really is all about special teams.
Right.
And sometimes though, like position coaches, they'll do it. And they'll do probably a pretty good job, but like they have
their own set. Yes, like I mean, when you're getting ready to play. I mean, okay, so like just throwing this out, you're Tony Tuioti.
Yeah,
you're coaching the defensive line. You got Wisconsin this week. You got a lot on your plate in figuring out getting your defensive linemen ready to go to slow down those guys, and then oh by the way, you also have to get ready for. Their punt return, their punt, you know, like all that, you know, like that's just a lot.
Yeah.
So it'll be
a lot to do it all. I mean, that's why they would divvy, I think.
Right.
They'd say, you know, Tony, you do punt return and, you know, Sean Becton, you do punt, like, you know, and so on, right? Yeah. And then you focus on that one thing. You watch that film, you do those breakdowns. You got to make sure you know you're three deep at every position and, you know, you're responsible for a lot then.
It'll be interesting. I mean, because that stuff, that, like you said, obviously that was such a glaring problem.
Yeah.
Just dead.
Not good anywhere across the board.
No. Not at all. So anything we're missing with the new hires and who's out? I mean, I think that's...
I think we touched a little bit on the outside linebackers, but that's just a spot that... That's a spot that... receivers and outside line, they just have to get better. So, I mean, I think it's understandable that the mutual separations were at those spots because it just... There wasn't the probably the results you were
Absolutely. If you polled Husker Nation and say which two position groups struggled, you'd probably be like wide receivers and outside linebackers.
Yeah, and that was it.
And where are their new guys? Wide receivers and outside linebackers.
And that's where you don't know if it's the coach's fault or not. But you kind of sometimes you go,
it's one of those things. That's why sports is it's a results oriented business.
Mm-hmm.
It whatever the reason is it's you know I mean. It is what it is, you know?
Yeah. So sometimes the clean start is what's needed.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. So it has been quiet because I don't even know now. Like, now, granted, it's usually kind of quiet this time of year anyways. Like, February up until the start of spring ball is always pretty quiet to begin with. But this has been really quiet, which maybe is good.
Yeah, these guys don't need hype right now. They've been living in that world of hype every year, and the hype train is not...
Let me tell you,
right now.
This is going to be, I honestly think this is going to be the least hyped season nationally and locally that in a war. I mean, I'm trying to think of a year that there would have been less hype.
Because Nebraska football understands, they understand where they're at and what that schedule is. They all know.
Right.
They know that schedule's brutal next year. The last five games are brutal. Luke Fickell just decided to stay on with Cincinnati, and they're a top 25 team.
Yes.
That was supposed to be one of our non-con easies.
Yeah, good luck with that. So, I mean, because you just go through in your mind of like each year, you know, think about the years you were there. There always was a story you could tell and why the season's why the season could be like, oh, you know, okay, so here comes year one of Callahan. What's this going to be like? Okay, so then, you know, like 06, you guys were good. Then 07, this is the returning Big 12 North champs and their preseason top 25. Oh, yeah. And they're, you know, like then 08, first year of Pelini. Oh, like each year there's something that you, even you get to Riley, it's like year one of Riley. Oh, what's going to happen in year two? Year two, they won 9 games. What's now? Are they ready to take off? Like this year.
I think because we had two years that were very disappointing and just like it was just like we just stubbed our toes so many times for 2 years that people go, oh, we missed a great opportunity. And they all are aware of the difficulty of this third year. And so,
because Nebraska could be better. Nebraska could be a better team and finish with the same record.
Yes.
They could be a dramatically better team and finish with five wins.
If they can win more than 6 games next year, they are doing well.
Because here's the thing, like you talked about with how that schedule finishes, the one thing they better hit the ground running. You know, they better be playing good football in September and October.
Yeah,
early October.
Yeah, I don't have right now. Uber confident that they are going to make the leap to handle that schedule yet. Like I think,
and even by saying that doesn't make me like, you know, obviously you don't want to get the games still matter and winning and losing matters, but like I don't know. I mean, I think like in my mind I can see a world where I just think you want to. Again, this goes back to everything that's been talked about for the past couple of years. Yeah, people want to see wins and losses, but I think the biggest thing people wanted to see was it coming along.
Yeah, we got to be a better football team. Like we got to be better at football, at the details, at playing hard and playing smart when it matters. I think that if we do those things and we get beat by a better team, like when you get beat by Ohio State and they're just better than you, you're just like,
you go, okay, well, whatever.
Okay,
yeah.
But you just can't lose those, like, stub your toe to Iowa, stub your toe to Purdue and Indiana, just not show up at Minnesota type of thing.
You know, or like, be up 17-0 at Colorado and lose, you know, stuff like those.
If those go away
and Nebraska still ends up 5-7, yeah, I'm not saying people are going to be excited around here, but I don't think it's going to be – I think that's the big thing. Next year, I do think it would be good to get to six wins just to get that monkey off your back of like they're going to a bowl game.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing is we need to be in a year from now all in agreement that that team got better last year. That team was much better.
That team improved and was much better against tough schedule. Get to a bowl game.
If you can say those two things,
success.
You probably take it at this point.
And having that hype train really just,
the hype came a year or two, because that's the other thing too that'll make people in terms of the national hype. The national hype train got burned by Nebraska last year because they anointed Nebraska as being the deal, and then it didn't work out. So now all the national people are not going to be pegging Nebraska.
Yeah. So,
which in some ways is like
it might help these guys. I think.
I think what could help these dudes is just having no attention nationally. Like they're going to have attention, but even locally right now, I'm real interested. Bill Moose made a comment. I think that spring game ticket sales are going really well and all that stuff. I'll be interested to see what ultimately that looks like and all that stuff. This offseason is going to be very, very interesting because I think it's not going to feel quite like how it's felt. I think there's a lot of people. Not that they're all I think everybody's still. Vast majority of people are all in on Frost, but I don't think people are going to be ready to be drooling over themselves like they have in the past.
Yeah, the one thing that this coaching staff, I think they're going to, it hurts to say, but they had such an opportunity to capture what was happening, and all they had to do is win a couple more games each of those years. I mean, two more games each of those years, and people would still be in that honeymoon phase with them. It would never end. It would basically just the honeymoon would go on forever if they could just keep.
Isn't that, that's so true.
But we stubbed our toe enough those first 2 years that the honeymoon wore off. And now people are kind of going, it's kind of like they're worried that this, you could feel it. You feel that they've pulled back a little bit. I mean, they're not out. They're still in.
Totally.
But they're not.
Oh, they're not in the same way.
Goo goo gaga in love.
You're so right. Isn't it just amazing? Were. Like, if over the last 2 years, if Nebraska would have found a way to win both Colorado games, which is not crazy at all.
They were one.
They were one. They would have found a way to, who was the team that?
Close Northwestern, close Purdue, Indiana.
And then why am I blanking on who was the team that came in here and won in year one when Andrew Bunch started?
Oh, was it not Nichols? It was
It
was Troy, wasn't it?
Troy, right?
I think it was Troy. Troy beat us. Yeah, so we lost two of our first two. Yeah,
you beat Colorado both times. You beat Troy, and you find a way to hang on against Northwestern in year one.
Maybe then you end up beating Ohio State at Ohio State.
So and if saying,
then it's a whole different world.
We're not saying they get to, instead of year one, instead of going 4-8, they get to 6 or 7 wins. And last year, they get to 6 or 7 wins. The feel around here would be dramatically different.
Yeah, if we go 6 wins and 7 wins, which we should have done, in my opinion, without almost doing anything else, just things went our way. We didn't stub our toe. Where we go 6 wins, 7 wins, and I think the whole narrative, Husker Nation's drooling, like maybe recruiting would have been better. I mean, who knows the differences it would have made, but the feelings would have been different with those 3-4 wins.
Absolutely, and they're all games that it's not, you don't have to get, we're not sitting here talking about if Nebraska could have found a way to beat Michigan at Michigan. No, that game was an ass kick and they were never going
to. It's not like, hey, you need to make these 10 plays differences. Like, just don't. Fumble. Don't let that ball go over your head. At
just
the end
something
of the game.
Little.
Don't hit the guy coming across the middle when it's 4th and 20.
Right.
Like the simplest one play out of each game that ends the game. Those are the ones that we always found a way to mess up.
Because it's hard. I mean, the thing that's hard right now is usually you can conjure up any sort of optimistic glass half full scenario as to why you think this team might win 9 games or 10. It's hard to do that with this team right now.
Yeah,
it is hard to think about finding an article in July of someone being like, the team, I'm Bill Simmons, and the team to watch in the Big Ten West, I think, is Nebraska. Like, you cannot, like, I don't know how you would
Here's, if I had to make a...
Make the case.
Make if you the had case. To make, if I have to make the case right now. Bill Simmons
Bill
here
Bill Simmons
no.
making the case?
offensively, you're getting Spielman, Wandale, and then adding a third or maybe fourth piece that can at least contribute. I think this Omar Manning and one of these other guys can at least functionally help out. So that's already going to get better. It's got to get – you can't be worse than the way we were receivers last year. Our quarterback play, we all can admit, probably regressed. I think that's going to – you know, that's going to improve in my –
Martinez is going to get healthy, and you've got to assume it. And here's the other thing. Even if it doesn't get better, you have other guys that have, you know, at least Vedrill's played, McCaffrey's played.
But Martinez is now, he's going to win his third year. Like, he is now going to, like, he should be feeling confident in just the sense of, like, he's gotten a pretty good amount of experience.
Right.
Which is going to help.
Makes a huge difference.
The offensive line should be a step up.
And it
everybody's
got,
coming
and
that, back.
And it got better. Like, by the end of the year, it had gotten better.
It had gotten better. So guys like Juergens and, guy, you know, these fair enough, these guys are going to be better next year. They're about, I think they're about one or, you know, if they had one or two other guys is, you know, that I think are those young, those freshmen that are talented, I don't know if they're ready yet. But it would really help to get one or two more guys to be able to really kind of solidify that line. But I think offensively, we should see some strides. The running back, God, we could use some help with for Mills.
That's my thing. That's the only...
Somebody's got to help him. Somebody's got to help him, and that's where I don't feel comfortable saying, yeah, one of these freshmen... I don't trust these freshmen running back right now. I just don't.
Yeah.
Until I see him, I'll tell you when I see him, but I haven't seen him play, and...
Until you do it, it's hard.
Mills, though, I think Mills is going to elevate another... Because his improvement was... From
amazing.
Game one to game, the last game was as good as anybody in the team.
And, I mean, again, I think, like, the dude that I... Imagine Wandale Robinson, like, with a year under his belt. And
yeah.
So, you, I mean, yeah, I mean, again, but it's
just... Don't forget about Wandale Robinson's on our team. I think that guy's really good.
Wandale's a really good player.
We've got him. Spielman, you know, he'll do what he does. And
yeah,
he's
going to do what he does.
But, like, if you add that
if
piece,
Manning hits... They find a complimentary piece to Mills, and Martinez returns to what people thought he would be. Not being a Heisman guy, but returns to being like what we think he could be able to do.
Then all of a sudden,
you got a little
scary again. You remember, like, people were kind of like, Nebraska. You know, like, Urban Meyer was like, oh my God, Nebraska's tough, man. Like, that's what we are when things are humming in this offense. So I don't discount that's still possible. We just gotta fill those pieces. And the defensive side of the ball, that's where I'm a little like this front seven. I mean, it's a full rebuild for the front seven. Like those front seven dudes, I mean, besides the inside linebackers who are those guys are gonna be the veterans. That spot should be
better.
Should be solid.
But all of a sudden now, you know, it's like the big Daniels gone. Like
three big downs and two outsides. I mean, we got to find five new guys to play those spots. JoJo will play his, what's that? What do they call that position? His. They got a special name for it. Start with a Z. Or...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, though. But yeah.
It's like the reverse. It's like the nickel almost. But it's that hybrid spot. So he'll play that, but they really got to find two other outside linebacker, DN, pass rushers, and then three big down dudes, and then somebody to sub in for those dudes. Because those guys don't play.
So anymore. The reality is that, like, when they're, you know, there are more questions than answers.
Yeah, the defensive front seven is what scares me. Actually, more than the offense, the defensive front seven.
Right. I mean, so we'll see. It just, in some ways, you know, everybody should brace themselves for a pretty quiet handful of months here. But I also think that's maybe good. Maybe quiet and no hype is what everyone needs.
It'll be fun to see the spring game though. Who kind of looks different than last year?
Yeah, I'm excited for the spring game.
I am too. More than this year, I'm excited to see who looks different because. it's that this is a development. It's developmental time more than it ever was. Like, I don't think that was the case as much last year. These guys were either just too young where it's like they weren't going to be ready. But now it's like some of these dudes have had now 2 or 3 years to
it's time.
Be in the system. Like, who's going to show
who's
up and
popping,
be a man now?
Who's looking like it? And I mean, that's
Martinez. Watching Martinez. I hope he looks different.
Because you know what's funny is, like, you bring up the development. Like, people say Nebraska has to be a player developmental a player development program, right?
Yeah.
But everybody says that, but then people are also, and I'm speaking in generalities, which is a dangerous thing to do, but like, people also want to write off players if they don't hit right away. And that's kind of like, you can't have it both ways. Like, either, you know, there's some, like, people are ready. I mean, we around here just move on from people. Like, if they don't splash right away, people are like, yeah, that guy sucks. He's a bust.
Yeah.
And so it's weird. It's like, well, either this is a player development program and you have to exercise some patience with people and allow them to develop, or it's hard to have it both ways with that.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be you wait 3 or 4 years to get your chance to play.
Right. But it's amazing how now, like, if people don't make a splash right away, like, who's the great safety that came in? Noah Poligates.
Yeah.
Oh, people have just, like, moved off him.
No, we don't need him anymore. We got this guy now.
Noah Poligates is good. It's like, well, what do you mean? Like, he came in as a freshman.
He's 19.
He's 19. Yeah. Like, who might be really, really, really good next year? Noah Poligates.
Or maybe he needs another year.
You know who still could end up being, like, a great player at Nebraska is Noah Poligates.
Yeah, some guys.
But people don't want to let, like, people just.
Some guys,
like,
take longer. Yes. It's just, I don't know how to explain it. Like, the great ones maybe don't, but, like, not everybody is going to be in the pro
think
football
people understand that. First of all, the step up from high school football to college football, there's a non-negotiable level of physicality and strength you have to have to be able to play. That can take time for people. Mm-hmm. And then, like, just the difference of, like, being able to kill in high school football and have that translate to college football right away is just hard to do.
It's really hard.
It's hard. So I thought the player developmental thing, it's like people, we write off people fast around here.
Yeah. I think the part that's, it's so weird is those we have this team that's maybe not deep enough. So there's that, well, shouldn't then he be playing right now?
And I understand that.
And I don't know what the right answer is, because some guys, if you play them before they're ready, all you do is get them hurt and ruin their confidence.
Right.
Does that make sense? Yep. So,
I understand. Understand that when you're not, don't have the depth in theory.
If you're not
then
physically
guys
ready to play, it's like,
I guess that's my thing with
all, like, you do is just go out there and just get your butt kicked.
I mean, who might be really good? Nick Henrich might be really good next year.
Yeah.
You know, the Burke, you know, like, but that's a position that, like, he probably needed to get stronger, you know, and then he got hurt. And but there, you know, there could be some guys that, like, a year ago, everybody was drooling over Noah Poligates and Nick Henrich and all those guys. And now people are like, oh yeah, I forgot about him. It's like, yeah, some of these guys. But to your point, we'll wrap it up with it. Like, when the spring game comes, like, you better, when me and you do our spring game recap, like, we better have, like, almost too many guys to be like, boy, that guy looks different. That guy looked good.
Yeah, we'll
boy,
maybe he, have, like, we'll have, like, yeah, the biggest movers, like, the guys that made the biggest
the
leap.
Biggest, like, we, you better have, it better look like that. We're at an hour and four minutes, so we better wrap it up. We started with Shakira She-Wolf, and we ended with Noah Poligates. Now, tell me that that's not covering it all right there, all right? That is covering it all.
I feel good about it.
I feel pretty darn good about it. Okay, well, we talked about it before. We ended up not doing it. We got to fire up the wine pod. You and I have not had a glass of wine together since the last wine pod. New Year's Eve, we went out and got a few drinks.
That's right. When's your next?
So I'm going to LA to do a little studio this weekend, and things slowed out. Like, the back end, I'll have, and then I come back and I have 4 or 5 days at home before I have a Creighton TV Fox game. So we'll have time when I get back from LA on the 17th. We'll have time to
drink some a bottle.
Oh, God.
Get that vino flowing.
We got to figure out what we want to talk about during this. I don't know if we want to fire up a mailbag for it or what we want to do. We got to figure out what we want to do during this this
Shakira podcast.
The Shakira podcast. The tribute to She-Wolf, the music video. When that came from my cubicle in 2009. Don't come to my cubicle. Nick, we've pulled your IP computer. You've watched She-Wolf 400 times.
Oh, Nick, I'm sorry. We're going to have to let you go. That's an unacceptable amount of times.
Oh, man. Well, here's the thing. We'll wrap it up because I want to go watch the She-Wolf video now. It's been a long time since I've watched She-Wolf.
Why don't you turn it on right now? Let's get out of this.
All right, let's wrap it up. I'm going to go watch She-Wolf. All right, everybody subscribe to the podcast. Go watch She-Wolf. You know the drill.
A Parkville Media Production.